The question and answer section in this audio clip was part of a live lecture delivered by John Mellor Clark on core assessment. It was recorded on the 24th of May, 2020. The first question is there a risk that clients start to anticipate the questions that will be asked and perhaps give the answer they think you'll want to hear?
Oh, it's a fantastic question. Absolutely brilliant. And what a great therapeutic alliance you'd have if your client wants to please you so much that he or she is trying to think about what's the answers that's going to please the most, etc. I think that, you know, this is a long, long, long held argument in the use of questionnaires in therapy, etc. But they have such a long history. You know, I mean, we are here today delivering this profession because randomized controlled trials were done that used questionnaires to demonstrate that giving therapy had a much, much greater benefit than not giving therapy. And whilst there is such a thing as, I think it's called the halo paradox. And the halo paradox is essentially somebody will not criticize you if you have tried to help them, irrespective of whether they feel helped. So there's always that sort of demand characteristic, if you like, in measurement. But at the end of the day, they are the best technology that we've got. They're well established within the profession, and we owe a lot to them to be here today. So yes, always caveats, but they're an established mechanism and tool.
I think there'll be a lot of people Googling Halo Paradox after this, John. So our next question, and I think this is an interesting one, are the items in Core OM validated for use in African cultural environments? So there's a kind of cultural aspect to this. What's your view on that, John?
That's a really good question. You know, I think when we set out to develop the core in 1998, we were trailblazing to some extent because we put a lot of thought into the methodology, et cetera, et cetera. It was a very successful tool in the sense that it had very good face validity. Clinicians liked it, and a new spread abroad and into other countries. And we started a program of supporting other countries that wanted to make cultural back translations of the core measure. And if you want to read about the cultural back translation work of CORE, then on the CORE System Trustees website, you'll find a list of current translations going on. I know certainly in South Africa, there was a job of work that was done to translate the CORE into a range of different cultural variations, etc. But a good question. It's a very scientific process. You can't just sit down and say, well, let's get the translator out. What is it? What is the word for anxiety? What's our word for depression, etc.? What you have to do is to work out what those words actually mean in the culture in which they're being applied. So you can't simply translate it as a language. You have to translate the meaning of the word to the culture, and some don't translate to the cultures, target cultures.
How interesting. Has it been translated? How many times do you say it's been translated? So how many different countries has it been adapted for?
To the best of my knowledge, I think there are currently around about 20 different language translations. Now, they tend to be most of the European languages, so Italian, Spanish, German, Danish, French, Norwegian, Swedish, etc., etc. But the measure has been picked up further afield. It has been translated. There are Indian language translations, and indeed there are Asian language translations of CORE. And again, you could read about that work on the trustees website if you were interested in those.
Well, that answers the question, and I think I think very thoroughly. It isn't just a kind of westernized measure. It's been used in all areas of the world.
I think one of the things I would just add, Rory, is what has astounded me, I guess, over the years is, you know, that when I was talking in the lecture about this idea of a cutoff, you know, you design, let's say, cause a thermometer, and you're giving it to see if people have got a temperature, and you give it to 1,000 people in the UK. We've now given it to 1,000,000 people in the UK, and the temperatures have stayed the same for 10, 20 years, they're well established now. What's amazed me is, certainly in the European translations, how those temperatures, those norms, if you like, those thermometer readings have been very, very similar across the European countries.
Uh-huh. So it's almost like the measurement is accurate in other countries, even though may have to change the questions or omit questions because you cannot translate the meaning. The actual results are broadly the same. I think that is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, the normative data, to put the technical terminology to it, the normative data is very similar across European countries having the European translations.
So here's another question, which, again, I think is an interesting one. What about survey fatigue? How do we get around that with clients? Is there a possibility that clients would just get fatigued with filling the survey?
I think that's an absolutely brilliant question. Absolutely. And that's really, of course, if every time you were coming into the therapy room, you were asked to fill in this particular questionnaire and nothing was being done with it, yeah, you're going to get fatigued. But if somebody's going to sit and talk you through and look at the differences, even if that's just a score this week, how's your temperature this week, how's your pH, you know, how's your depression, how's your anxiety, etc., what we have found, you know, we are one of many people that have designed software, and we designed it in 2001, and so we've got 20 years experience in this. We ask a question in our own software when we're digitizing core and clients are filling it out every single session on these tablets, et cetera. There are 10 questions, and then there's the 11th. And the 11th question is, how do you feel about being asked to fill this questionnaire in today? And there's approximately about 1,000,000 sessions a year being filled in with core. And I have to say, I am constantly surprised that the percentage is as high as it is. The top of our scale is don't mind. Oh, sorry, the top of the scale is quite like it. The next one down is don't mind. 96% of clients over the 10 years that we've been doing it have constantly been at that don't mind or quite like it. And it's at the end of the day, it's down to how the practitioners use it and interpret it and help it to be a dipstick on how's your week been. Oh, I can see you've had a tough week this week. Oh, I can see you've had a better week this week. It's just a checking in for the client.
Yeah, it's a checking in tool, but it links strongly to the therapeutic relationship, doesn't it? Because it can be used to instigate an intervention or to really get a really good sense of where the client is that's unspoken. And I suspect that clients would get fairly fatigued if someone just filled the form in and said, thank you very much, and then put it to one side and then said, how's your week?
There's no surer or quicker way to fatigue than that. There is no reinforcement, is there? There's no reward for going back to your first question. There is no reward for the client for having searched their hearts and searched their souls and answered these questions honestly, than to then be for that questionnaire to be put to one side and say, right, thanks for filling that in. Now, how's your week been?
Yeah, so here's a follow-on question for that. And it says, core is too lengthy. The client is out to be supported. Reducing the length would be appropriate. So I think the question is there. I think that the questionnaire is too lengthy and may eat into therapeutic time. I wonder what your thoughts are on that, Jim.
Well, I think that we have to be clear about too lengthy at what time in therapy. So Our recommended methodology, if you like, is that we have the core outcome measure that is 34 items long, that is designed to be used as an assessment tool to inform the practitioner, and for the practitioner then to talk with the client about the well-being, the symptoms, the functioning, and the various aspects of risk for the client. And it takes 34 items to cover that ground. If you're using core more frequently within therapy, then the 10-item version is designed to be used at each session. And we have on account from therapists tell us that that doesn't take longer than a minute to 2 minutes for a client to fill in. And these days, what would typically happen is that invitation to fill out a core measure or PHQ-9 or GAD-7 would come to the client on their mobile phone, tap, 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 and they've filled it in before they even get into the therapy room. So it's not stealing any time from that therapy session. It's actually helping to inform that therapy session.
Yeah, so modern technology could get around the feeling that it was interrupting the session or taking time away. But actually, I think from what I can see from your lecture, that it feels to me like it's the integral part of the therapy, because once it's filled in, you've got a really good barometer of what's going on for the client. And I think sometimes clients don't tell you what's going on for them. Sometimes by looking at the chart, you can kind of instigate that kind of observation. And I think that's really important.
So, and some things are just too tough to talk about.
Absolutely.
So, you know, one of the questions that is a tough question that is on the core 10 question asked at every single session is, I made plans to end my life. And you need to know that as a therapist. And whilst it's a tough question, having it is a really getting to the heart of it and asking the question is, are you at risk? And that, and, you know, that is so important at this moment in time, and will be really important to be having those questionnaires and having that reassurance as a therapist sat there that that is not an issue for this client this week.
Yes, yes. So it really does test the temperature, and certainly with clients who may be at risk, to use that term, yeah. Pretty much essential. One question's come in, and someone says, as a therapist, what happens if the client's score is consistently high? So I'm not sure what high means in this context, but say for instance someone came in and they were scoring very high, in other words they were very, to want of a better phrase, happy. How would a therapist work with that?
Well, feigning good, I guess, is what we're talking. I mean, on the actual core measure, scoring high would mean scoring in the severe area or the moderate to severe area.
Yes.
So you'd actually be scoring on the core measure, scoring low and scoring high have very different connotations.
Yes.
So if we're going along with the scoring low,
yes,
we reverse it and we're, yes, saying, well, this person's got a normal temperature. Why are they in therapy, etc.?
Yes.
Now, that's a really interesting question because, you know, I'm the consumer of therapy. I'm the researcher of therapy, Rory. But, you know, I just think back to my own therapy experiences. And, you know, sometimes it takes two or three sessions to get the measure of somebody and to work out whether this is somebody that you feel that you can trust, that you can articulate your story to, etc. And maybe you do feign good as a client until suddenly you decide this is a person that I can work with. This is a person that really has a potential to be able to help me. And I am going to open up here and I am going to say. And that is not an unusual phenomena when we look at the data, scoring 5, 5, 10, 5. And then suddenly it looks as if something's happened. I can't.
Yes.
Actually, it's a different phenomena. It's that the client has decided that they feel safe to open Pandora's box. Of course, if that isn't the explanation, then, you know, a lack of psychological mindedness, a lack of motivation for change, being here in the therapy room because The wife has told you if you're not in the therapy room sorting out your problem, she's going to leave you. You know, we all know and can put lots and lots of clinical potential explanation to people who might consistently score low, even though we as therapists would know, you as therapists would know, actually this person, you know, those are really interesting cases.
Yes. And
great question.
And a good strong reference to Roger's seven stages of process there, where people start in therapy and people who may not be a great fit for it because they don't want to be there. So in terms of scoring high, somebody not seeming to get, and I'll use the word kind of better as a shortcut. Mm. What would happen if, what would the observation be if someone consistently scored high and it didn't seem that things were changing?
I mean, for me, they're the gold dust. You know, they're the gold dust of therapy and, you know, personal development. You know, as a practitioner, as a researcher, I'm not good at all forms of research. I can muddle through, but I wouldn't say I'm expert at it. And perhaps that might be true of many therapists as well. Are we all generalists in which we're practicing our skills and having an effect with everybody? Or, to put it in the CPD context, if you're collecting data routinely and you find that some of these people who are continually scoring high have a pattern, is that telling you something? Is that telling you something about you as a therapist and about your professional development, et cetera? And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean it quite the reverse, in a positive way. Mm-hmm. But here is something I am learning about myself. I have a learning edge here that I need to sharpen. That, you know, we hear it all the time. That might be working with a particular age group. It might be working with a particular presentation. It might be working with a particular personality type that are more assertive, defensive, etc. You know, any number of things.
Yes, and therapy is always best fit for clients. It could possibly be that the therapeutic intervention you're using doesn't fit that client, and which is another conversation to have, which is why the assessment is so useful.
Yeah.
One question that I find fascinating is that with the CYP course, some of the questions are not young person language friendly. In giving assistance to aid understanding, does this affect the course score? So if you have to interpret what the questions are for someone who may not understand what the words mean, does that have an impact on the score?
I think it might. And if we were talking about a research study and we wanted to be absolutely certain that the measure was administered in exactly the same way every single time, then that would be an issue. I think in practice and in the generation of what's called practice-based evidence, it's less important. And so sometimes clients will need to be helped. But if we just go stick on the CYP core, the other thing is about the age sensitivity. And, you know, when we designed the CYP measure, we were very conscious of the literature talking about, you know, what ages it was suitable to have to use Likert scales, where a client is having to differentiate between a frequency scale, etc. And there's a general opinion that really below 11, you really shouldn't be using a Likert scale. So you might see the happy faces type scales, etc., where they're ringing a particular face that that is a better communication as their score, etc., etc. So I think, yeah, in terms of how you administer it, whether it's okay to help client, of course it is. If it's a tool that's going to help the client communicate something and it has value to you because you value the questions and having the answers from the client as helpful, then if a client was struggling to articulate it in writing and they were important to you, then of course you'd take the time to help them to come to an answer.
Yeah. Or maybe use just a different form of evaluation. As you say, if you're working with very young children or people maybe with learning difficulties, you may have to be a little bit creative on that. We've got a question that comes in, and it says, do person-centered therapists use CORE?
Yes, they do. Now, I can't quantify that. When people download the core, we don't ask who are you and what's your modality and these sorts of things. But I know from experience that a lot of person-centered counselors have thought about their relationship with measures generally and have gone on very creative journeys, very challenging journeys, personal journeys, and very exploratory, experiential journeys. And on the other side of those journeys, they've decided that measurement has a really good place, because at the end of the day, measurement is person-centered.
Mm. Yes, people don't realize that. Rogers was himself a clinical research psychologist. He was, measurement was at the core of everything he did. In fact, he invented seven stages of process as a form of therapeutic measurement.
Yeah.
You know, people don't realize that. Or sometimes maybe people realize, but they don't maybe fully grasp why the seven stages of process was there. It is a really useful tool to be able to work in supervision, and I guess core is in that tradition. It's a verbalized version of it. So the answer is yes, they do, and I think it's quite a principled position, speaking as a person-centered therapist. So I think it's quite a principled position. I think this is a good question. How would you introduce the final question? I think
before you go on to that, Rory, just from a comment that just come in. Oh yes, they do. All my PCT colleagues do, and that's from Colin. So there you go.
There you have it. Thanks, Ken. So there we have it. A question on introducing assessment to a new client.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah. So. I guess the question is fairly brief, but how would you introduce it to a new client? I guess the form of words you'd use to give the client an introduction to what you are asking them to do.
Mm. That's a really, really good practical question. Again, pinning my colours to the mark, I am not a practitioner, so I can't talk from practice as to what I do to introduce a measure. But I train in the measure, and I talk to practitioners who have found their ways of introducing it. And I think that generally how clients will, how practitioners will introduce the measure to a client is to explain that this is a tool to help us to understand one another. It's a tool that's going to help me to understand how you are today and how you are each week. It's a tool, it's a checking in tool that we can use each week when you come into therapy. And it's a tool that will help me to understand whether what we are doing together is working for you, and where it's working and where it's not working. And a really good example of introducing the measure is on the role play videos that I've attached as resources to this lecture, Roy.
Yes, and I am a practicing therapist, and I have to say, John, that's exactly how I do it. And I think it's about having a collaborative mindset with the client and saying this is going to help me help you and you to help yourself, and we could both look at this together and just see where you are and see where you want to be. And that's a very person-centered kind of view of things. So I think it's about mindset. I think when you're introducing anything that could be new, it's about having a positive mindset of it and thinking, how does this help the client and how can I convey that it's there to support this person? And once you've got the form of words that really show that, then I think the rest is fairly easy to go along.
Wonderful words. Wonderful words, Brilliant.
So a couple of questions about the virtual and the physical world. A lot of us, most of us, everybody, I think, at the moment is on the world of online therapy at the moment. So how would it be? Any thoughts on administering it online? And I know you've touched on people filling it in before and having it on a maybe an iPad or a computer program. So how does that work?
Well, I think sending it to people is a really good thing. As I say, on that trustees website, the trustees have done a lot of hard work, the core system trustees, to digitize the measures, send them out as a fillable PDF. So you could email that to a client. Client can fill it in and return it to you. Alternatively, I know many, many practitioners who go through it on the phone, who just, as they're check-in, go through it, read out the 10 questions, particularly people that they're already working with, et cetera, and get their responses from them. But more normally, the easier way to do it is to send it to the client before the therapy session, receive it back from the client before the therapy session starts, have a look at what it's telling you, have a look if there's anything that's changing, either for the better or for the worse. Communicate back to the client those things are changing for the better, and explore with them those things that are perhaps a little worse than they were last week.
Great, great answer. And I think that's it. It's about adapting your practice. Yeah. We live in changing times and developing times, and sometimes we just need to develop our practice, and sometimes either doing it over the phone or doing it over the video link or just sending it before and getting the client to send it back. One question that's come in, and I think it may link with a response you gave earlier. How would you adapt the core measurement to someone with, and the term that's used in the question is intellectual disabilities?
That's a very good question. Again, in the core stable, when we designed the original core outcome measure, we then were inundated by requests from therapists who worked with other clinical populations, young people, elderly people with disabilities of all sorts, and there was some excellent work done to reframe the core measure. It was called Core LD, and it's up there on the site at the trustees, and it's pictorially represented. So each question has a picture that tries to convey what the question is asking. It then has a simplified introduction to that question, and frames it in two separate ways. So what I would say to your listener there is perhaps go and have a look at the Core LD and see whether that's going to meet that need.
Well, I mean, I think that answers that question. I'm just having a look because some of the questions have been asked. Here's one. When would you use the various core tools such as 34 as opposed to 10? So why would you use the longer questionnaire as opposed to the more brief version?
Well, for assessment, first of all, the core 34 questions is going to tell you more than 10 questions can. And if you want the very specifics, when we designed the core 10 questionnaire, we had to be very practical, and we had to look at the items that were going to be most informative for representing the fullness of the measure, if you like. So the 10 items chosen, we only chose one risk item, and we chose no well-being items, because well-being items are the first ones to change, and they change quickly, and sometimes they change really dramatically. And then the client will go on to work with the functioning and the problems, et cetera, et cetera. So the important thing to say is that in an ideal world, 34 items ask every single session. If you and your client can find value in them, they're going to come at the client's life in 34 different ways and from 34 different areas, and they're going to be much more sensitive to change. If 34 items feels too much for your client or for your population or for the time available, then the 10-item version used at each session will do the job extraordinarily well. It's the most common measure used across the UK, and those 10 items are embedded with, they're part of the core 34, And then if you have a planned session, you would go back to that final session. When you know it's the final session, you would have gone back to ask the 34 questions again. So 34, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 34 at the end. If you want to get really exciting, CORE exists in short forms. That's CORE cut in half. So if you like, we call them short form A and short form B. And if you were really interested in your measurement, you might give the 34 items, then an A, then a B, then an A, then a B. And that means that every 2 weeks you have the whole 34 items to be able to look back on, etc. So there's multiple variations that people can use to suit what it is that they actually like. There's even a CORE 5.
Well, there you have it. So the message there is have a look at that CORE website. Have a look at all the different measures. See how they fit with your clients. And just try them out. You may want to try them out with a peer. You know, if you're a student, you may want to try them out with someone at your college. But have a look at them and make sure you get, it's like everything here, it's the best fit for clients. The final question, John, because you've been so kind as to give us your time.
Okay, final question
is, how is CORE used in terms of a referral?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Okay. Well, let me give you the example from higher education. I think more and more as we enter into the age of technology, and GDPR means that we have to be careful what questions that we ask, and every question that we ask and every piece of information that we collect, we have to demonstrate that we use that information in pursuit of delivering the best services that we can for clients. More and more voluntary sector organizations, more and more university, you know, counseling and well-being services are incorporating online registration forms. And as part of an online registration form, more and more are building in CORE measures as part of that registration. So you fill in a registration form, says something about yourself, why you're seeking counseling, what you're hoping to get out of it, etc. Some of the practical issues like your GP, your consent to be contacted by email or by SMS, etc. And then an introduction to the questionnaire that the service uses and a statement on how that questionnaire is being used. And then they would fill out the CORE outcome measure. And obviously, by having those 34 items filled in, when the service is trying to make that big judgment of who should be seen next, where's the priority, etc., that could be part of that assessment.
Yes. And it could also be part of, if you have to make a referral, you know, as we said earlier, maybe people are scoring high consistently, and you realize they may need a different approach or even a different therapist, which is fine. Sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
And that could be used with the client's permission.
Yeah, sorry, I was talking about referral into the service. Yes. I mean, you're talking about referral out.
Yeah.
The service equally.
Yes, yes.
That's a good point, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, and I'm not sure what the question was alluding to, so we covered it both. So thank you so much for this question and answer. It's highly illuminating. And thank you so much for your time. It's just been a real treat, as we say in the North, a real treat, John.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, both. I'll leave you to it now, if I may.